the biggest thing in our industry, and I'm sure you've had this conversation before, is the VAT. We're VAT registered, and we struggle with that for the fact of you lose 20% every haircut. People say, well, you can claim it back. Because we don't buy a lot as an industry, it's really hard to claim it back. So that's where we struggle in terms of looking at maybe competitors as well.
It's my job or our job to let your team see they're getting somewhere, to keep it pumped, to keep it excited.
It excites me. I think nothing makes me more proud than seeing my members of the team do things. And that's kind of where I get my buzz from. And so if I can help them on the way, then, you know, it's a win-win on both sides. I think the £250, £300 marks all come from this footballer's social media in terms of this is how much footballers, you know, get charged for a haircut. What you see on Instagram, yes, some barbers are charging that amount of money and only doing, you know, a few haircuts a week. But the reality is they would have started with doing 10 plus haircuts every day behind the chair, charging X amount of money, doesn't matter. And they've worked their way up to that.
Hi there, I'm Anton Laban, and you're watching the Noble Barber Podcast. We're here to cut through the crap of the industry and give the answers, or at least try and find the answers to the problems that all of us as business owners struggle with every day. Thanks very much for watching. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi there. Welcome to another episode of The Noble Barber. I'm here today with Charles Rose.
Hello.
Hi, Charles. How are you doing?
All good.
We're talking... I guess I want to start with talking about whether you're a barbershop or not, I guess, because I kind of... my quick Google brings up lots that you're short hair specialist, gentleman's salon.
Yeah. A bit of everything. Everyone asks that, and I guess... The real answer is we kind of do a bit of everything. I don't like to label ourselves as like a barbershop or a hair salon, mainly for I think a lot of people still think barbershops are men only. Mm. So the short hair specialist and all those kind of hashtags and things we pop in as well is all to do with we are gender neutral. We do, you know, anyone can come into the salon for a haircut, for a chat. And that's, I guess, where it's probably got a little bit confusing to a few people is because we do all genders, we don't label ourselves as just a barbershop or just a hair salon. Because I think sometimes, you know, men feel like they can't go into hair salons, but I also think the other times, you know, other genders feel like they can't come into barbershops. So that's kind of where that's come from.
Well, I was intrigued there because I think there's still, I'm hoping it's dying off, but there's still a little bit of kind of separation between, you know, hair salons do this and barbers, we're barbers, we do that. Yeah. And this kind of big divide. And I quite like this kind of wedge that you were hashtagging in the middle. That's of it. Short hair specialist.
And I think that, you know, you're absolutely right. And that was kind of where Great Cheshire kind of grew from, really. I was always in a hair salon. But if I'm honest, I didn't want to go into a barbershop myself, you know, because as you can see, I've got slightly longer hair. But learning through the years, you know, barbers can cut hair, you know, and they don't just shave everything off, which is a common saying, what most people say. And it's not true. They, you know, barbers can cut hair. So it was kind of a thing, well, I want to be able to provide what you get in a hair salon in terms of service wise to a barbershop where you can do your skin fades, your razor work, but you can also cut long hair as well. So that's kind of where it all came about.
Oh, I love it. So what is your background? Let's step back a bit. How did you...
My background is, if you like, hairdressing. So my parents are hairdressers. I was doing my A-levels or GCSEs, and I realised school wasn't for me. I knew I didn't want to go into further education. And I loved working at my dad's salon. I was just washing hair there, sweeping up. And I enjoyed the atmosphere, you know, the chatting all the time, seeing people again on a regular basis. So I thought, you know, I'm going to give this a go. So my dad started to teach a little bit. My mum's also a barber. She taught me a little bit of on the barbershop side of things. And then I went to a salon in Oxford called Electric under Mark Woolley, and worked there for nearly 10 years and as a hairdresser, so mainly ladies. But I always loved the short hair on ladies, and you know, when we did have gents in, I kind of like, I guess, got attracted to the idea of doing shorter hair. So that's where that all came from. And then I decided... Me and my wife, I moved to London, met my wife now, and managed the electric salon in London for a few years. And then, yeah, we decided we'd had enough of London and couldn't afford London. decided to move up north, where obviously things are a little bit cheaper, but to start the business what we have now.
But you set up Crate.
Yep.
Good name, I quite like that.
Thank you.
There's so many bad
don't
names
ask
out
where
there,
that's coming
but,
from.
No, I'm not even there. But you opened that up 5 years ago, six years ago?
It'll be, I think, 6 years in July. So, yeah, it's been a funny 6 years in terms of, obviously, as you know, Anthony, you open up your first salon, you're one man band, and we then grew quite quickly in the town we were in, and then obviously lockdown.
How long did you trade before lockdown?
It was, I think it was 2 years, just under 2 years.
So you were quite established by that stage.
Yeah, we felt strong enough for it. Yeah, we knew we could get through it. We'd actually just taken on a couple of new people as well a few weeks before. So that was, you know, that was quite tough to take on board throughout whilst we were shut. But the beauty of that in a really roundabout way is when we opened, obviously everyone was so busy that the two new stylists got busy very quickly. But we've been flooded twice in 2 years as well, where we've had to completely get rid of everything. Unfortunately, where we were in one of the towns we were in, you couldn't get flood insurance at the time. So we literally, everything was thrown away. And so, yeah,
that's a proper kick in.
Yeah, that one, I'll be honest, that hurt more than COVID for obvious reasons. So, all the savings we
built. Two rebuilds in 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah, so I always kind of go, we've been open 6 years, but minus almost two because of COVID and the floods. But so it's been
Could you trade when you were flooded? Did you find somewhere else to work from?
With my pint glass half full, was in COVID. So we weren't open anyway, but it did. Right. Because it was to do with the drainage systems of the town, we had to throw everything away. So we literally started all again, and then obviously with not being open, no money was coming in. We just had to, you know, take on the chin and go. But what I will say, I think it's made me stronger as a business owner.
But you're saying that now. At the time, it's a kick in that you just don't. There's some black moment. I was going to say to you, how did you find from kind of, you know, running Mark's place to having your own place? But I mean, you walked straight into that. It must have been like life's a blender.
Yeah, it was. I feel now, you know, I've hit everything early. You know, so going forward, I'm hoping it's a slightly easier ride. But you know, it happens. There's a lot more people worse off than what we are. So, and that's how I look at it. You've got to get on with it and suck it up, really.
Well done.
So
that was the first one.
Yeah.
Was number two and number three less traumatic? Did they have their own natural traumas?
Number two was Knutsford. And if I'm being completely honest, we wanted to open up Knutsford when we lived in London. It's a really nice town. Quite a wealthy clientele there, and we knew that what we wanted to do would suit Knutsford as a town. Unfortunately, with it being such a popular place, shops don't come up often enough. So I had a phone call from the estate agent who got us the shop in our first shop in Northwich, whilst we were locked down in COVID, saying, "Hey Charles, how are you doing?" And I was like, "Well, I'm all right, but you do realise we're not trading at the moment." He's like, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I've got a shop in Knutsford you're going to really like." And I kind of said to him, "Mate," I said, "you know, no chance. We're not even open in the first salon. And he said, no, "I really need you to come and see it." So when we were allowed to go to meet people, I think the first day of that happening, I booked to go and see the shop in Knutsford. And as you kind of do when you go and see something new, you automatically fall in love. I just knew it was... knew is kind of, you know, I could see Crate in there already. So we opened that up in the kind of break of, I think we came out of lockdown, then went back into one, and we opened up in the middle, which we always knew was the risk, you know, that we were going to get locked down again. Unfortunately, we did. But, you know, we opening that, I knew that was a big, big possibility. We opened the second one up, then got locked down again. And then, yeah, luckily we haven't had any more lockdowns since opening up again.
No, but, I must admit, we opened up a store and traded for 2 days before the 4.5 month lockdown.
Yeah.
It's too harsh. Can't keep going over that. Yeah. It's heartbreaking. It was just, we've done it. I can't do it anymore.
I think as well, though, I say to like my wife is that if COVID didn't happen, as awful as this sounds, we might not have got that shot. So we had to do it there and then, because you can't get shops for love and money. So,
I mean, I get the love at first sight. Yeah. I must admit, I opened up, our store straight after COVID because I fell in love. I just didn't want anyone else to have the building.
That's right,
it would have just really pissed me off if I'd gone past and someone was in there selling tiles or coffee. Yeah. It was going to be too annoying. But did you step back and do a proper business plan when you're setting something up? Do you sit down with a spreadsheet or a pad? How old school or new school are you?
I call it my black book with all my ideas and, in even certain towns, we possibly in the future might open up with other stylists, etc. But in terms of a business plan, we do have like a model, a financial model, and also a model of how we want the salons to run, etc., etc. And I guess we tried it with the Northwich salon, our first salon, and that footprint's now worked in these next two. And the nice thing is, I think if you do have if you believe in something and you do what you say you follow through with, you can open up as many salons as you like if you prefer. But you have to have people around you who believe in the same way of doing things. And we are very, very lucky with the team we have the guys who do want to get involved and they do believe in what we're doing and they, they take on as well as we do.
And where do you get your team from? I've had lots of conversations about how people are struggling with staff and expanding their team.
Yeah. I'll be honest, we have that problem with expanding the team. But mainly locally, we have a training school as well. So we bring people through that. Mm. Mainly from the local side of you, where I think in the towns we are at, there's a lot of what's the words? People think they need to move to London or Manchester to create opportunities. And what we're saying is, look, we can offer you all that here. You don't have to move away to a big city to get what you want from our industry. We kind of promise them those things. And obviously we have to deliver it, otherwise they will go elsewhere. Don't overpromise, but I always say if you work hard then we can provide you these opportunities.
Do you employ your team?
We do, yeah.
Yeah, I think that definitely is an employer. It's changed, I think. It's my job or our job to let your team see they're getting somewhere, to keep it pumped, to keep it excited.
Yeah,
which is a good thing. I think it makes being an employer
A bit excites me.
Being the boss and keeps you enthused and energised.
Yeah, it excites me. I think, nothing makes me more proud than seeing my members of the team do things.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I get my buzz from. So if I can help them on the way, then, it's a win-win on both sides. We do employ. We've kind of looked at all
and presumably
aspects,
with COVID it helped because those ones are on the payroll. So you had a bit of furlough to keep your
team. They all got furlough paid. Yeah. It was
and
great.
And so then you went for crate three when you thought you could sleep at night.
That's right, yeah. So, this is one of my proudest stories, to be honest, because like I said earlier, when Crate was first, born, it was all about creating opportunities for other people, as well as ourselves, obviously, but mainly for other people. And Aidan, who is now a director of Crate, has been with us nearly from the beginning. And when we opened up our second salon, I kind of gave him the opportunity to manage that and say, look, if you can get this one right up and running, mate, we'll do one together. So 9 months ago now, Crate Macclesfield came, and Aidan owns 50% of that with myself. That was kind of a bit of a moment for me where
beautiful.
I was really proud of Aidan, but also proud of the brand because we've been able to generate something which was why we wanted to start it in the first place. So yeah, and that's luckily, you know, Aidan.
And follows the format, follows your footprint.
Follows the format. Aidan, you know, Aidan's a big part of Crate anyway, before Macclesfield was open, and you know, he's absolutely doing an amazing job there.
And so, over the kind of farming, three stores, one as a as a part owner now. That's you know, those are big moves in a very short time from moving back out of London, moving away. And then you added the academy.
Yeah. So the academy we've been doing came like with the second salon, in a sense. We had a space upstairs where we qualify students as MVQs with MVQ two level barbers. So that came about, and then we're just about to launch. It's being built at the moment, our own studio and our own space, where we will be doing our teaching from there, but also photographic studio and a space for the locals to use for themselves if they, you know, we've got like a yoga teacher wants to use it, so we can do all of that in this space. So I think that's the growing part of the teams and things like that.
That's what I mean. You know, we've spoken certainly about you know, for 5 years you've been, you know, a big part of our job is standing behind a chair. You know, you get behind a chair, you build your clients, you get your reputation, you know, all lovely. So all boxes ticked, fabulous. And now you seem, certainly in the last kind of 2 years, to be spreading yourself a little bit thinner. Competition seems to have arrived for you. Editorial, I've seen. You're starting to do more photographic, and now, like you, as you're saying, in your space, hopefully doing your own collections and stuff there. How's that working?
Yeah, good. Well, like you said, about? It's, it's definitely spread my wings very thin. But I think, you know, for me, it's all opportunities and opportunities. Again, going back to the team, it's, you know, the shoots I'm doing for, you know, brands. I'm being able to take some of the team on, teaching them the ropes, if you like. It's, you know, I've always done a bit of photography work, etc. Back when I lived in London. So, you know, and I got the opportunities from people in the industry to do that. So I kind of want to give back to now the team we've built. So that kind of came from that mainly. The competitions, if I'm honest, I never thought we'd ever win one, or let alone be in a final of one. It was just something we thought, you know what, you know, we're so passionate about the idea of this kind of like this hairdressing brand, which is for short hair, you know, customers and things like that. Let's just throw it out there and see what happens. Yeah. And luckily, we've got to many finals and won a few awards on the way. So, that's been great. But, I think the getting out there with, you know, different brands and stuff is kind of to promote Crate as well, you know, put ourselves on the map as well. I think when we won the British Hairdressing Awards, the business awards for the first time, I think when it said Crate Cheshire, like Northwich, I think people are like, where's that? What part of London is that?
They spelt Norwich wrong.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And one guy actually came to me and he did actually say, what part of London is that then? And I was like, oh no, it's not. It's in Cheshire, you know, that's part of the name.
So, I mean, we are certainly seeing more and more kind of faces popping up that are countrywide.
I don't think it's
particularly London centric at all.
Definitely not. No, and I think that's been changing for a long time, to be honest. You know, it's not just the last few years. I think, you know, even when I lived in London, there was plenty of people from outside of London and getting involved with the industry and things like that. And that is the beauty of our industry. I feel like you can, wherever you are in the world, you can, if you want to get and be a part of it, you can.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, just to wind back to the beginning a little bit, because I do think we seem to keep getting stuck with this pricing issue.
Yeah.
And I think whenever we talk about pricing on here, it tends to feel London Central, London can get away with that, you can get away with that. We spoke earlier about, you know, about youngsters coming into the industry thinking they should be doing, you know, £300 haircuts, and because they're seeing that on Instagram, doing one or two haircuts a day for £300 a pop, and all that kind of stuff. What's the reality of pricing for you guys?
Yeah.
Or how do you feel about pricing in general?
Yeah, I mean,
you're banging out a few £300 haircuts.
No,
I'm
not. No.
But I don't know who is. I don't think that's kind of promoted as a big part of our industry, which doesn't exist.
No, I think, you know, I think the £250, £300 marks all come from this footballer's social media in terms of this is how much footballers, you know, get charged for a haircut. You know, and if I'm honest, we've done quite a in Cheshire, a lot of footballers live. And, you know, we don't charge them more money because of who they are. We just charge them if they come to the salon. They just charge the going rate.
Store price, yeah.
So I do feel like, you know, what you see on Instagram, you know, yes, it does happen. But the reality of most 99% of barbers and things is that you are behind the chair 5 days a week, possibly. And you're doing 10 haircuts a day or, you know, or...
For your 300.
Yeah, to do your 300. And I do feel like, you know, the new generation coming through, you know, you have to, we have to be honest as an industry and be like, look, you know, what you see on Instagram, yes, that, you know, these some barbers are charging that amount of money and only doing, you know, a few haircuts a week. But the reality is they would have started, you know, with doing 10 plus haircuts every day behind the chair, charging X amount of money, doesn't matter. And they've worked their way up to that.
Yeah, perfecting your craft and
getting lucky. Yeah, and I feel that, again, going back to where we're talking about struggling for maybe staff or barbers to join your teams, I feel like a lot of barbers have now, you know, don't want to work in salons. They just want to be doing these. Mm. And they give up quite easily because they're not doing £250 haircuts for like 3-4 a week.
Yeah,
they give up because they think, well, that's all I want to be doing. I only want to be doing a haircut a day. And if that was the real world, crikey, you know, wouldn't that be nice? But you have to, it's like any industry, you have to get your stripes.
Do you still see, you know, I certainly do, there's a difference between a gent's haircut in a salon, price-wise, against a gent's price in a barber's.
Yeah.
And then there is a little bit more of the kind of hinterland between the two.
Yeah.
But I'm not encountering quite as many. I am trying to look hard now, but I'm not encountering parity between a gent's haircut in a salon against the gent's cut in a barber's.
Yeah, I think, you know, and this is not every salon or stylist or barber or, you know, barbershop, but this is, again, where I feel like in a hair salon, you might do a gent a day, maybe two a day. Yeah. You don't do as many, but you're charging more money than, you know, John is down the road who's doing 10 a day.
Yeah.
So I've never understood the price difference, to be honest, between the two. And yes, you can argue the service, et cetera, in one of the salons is better or worse. But the quality of the haircut, I don't think, you know, means that you should be charging X amount more than you know, so-and-so who's doing, doing a lot more gents' haircuts than yourself.
Mm. But I think even kind of, you know, the kind of new breed of barbershops that are coming through aren't.
No, yeah.
You know, and the young, and the barbers themselves are uncomfortable to up their pricing. It's, you know, I don't think it's all kind of punter-led. You know, think punters, you know, I think, there may be a price in punters' heads for what it is, but I don't know how we eradicate that. And
I've always looked at time. You know, what's your time worth? So, for example, the busier you are, you charge more because you have less time in the day because you've got so many clients, if that makes sense. So you can, you know, we do have different targets for our team so they can earn more money but also get promoted, if you like, to
and
a different tier
system.
So... You know, and sometimes one of our guys actually, he's almost like beaten the tier. He's got so busy and so quick. We've actually just upped his price again because he is so busy.
And the reaction? No one seems to bat an eyelid, really. Do they? I think it's all that. I'm not sure if it's our perception that all the punter won't like it.
I completely agree. I think clients who appreciate the work you're doing and giving to them, they don't bat an eyelid. Mm. You know, I've always said to a client, if they've ever said to me, oh, how come your price is going up by £2? So, well, these are the reasons, because of time and things like that. But also that's one less, you know, if you're getting a coffee every day, that's one less a month you could put towards your haircut, you know. But no one really says anything. If your service is how it should be, your haircut's obviously how it should be, people are willing to pay it. Yeah. I think the biggest thing in our industry, and I'm sure you've had this conversation before, is the VAT. Mm. You know, we struggle with, obviously we're VAT registered, and we struggle with that for the fact of you lose 20% every haircut. And even though people say, oh, we can claim it back, but because we don't buy a lot as an industry, it's really hard to claim it back. So that's where we struggle in terms of looking at maybe competitors as well.
I mean, I do think it's because, you know, customers can't claim it back. No one's doing anything with it. No. And it's service led. So most of our costs are. I mean, there was a salon employers association that's set up to try and, you know, I do think that kind of reducing it down to 10%, which I don't think is going to happen.
No.
I mean, I think there's lots of talk at the moment that the government coming in may change to a lower threshold. Which I guess will change it again.
Will definitely. And I think that where as an industry, and I've had this conversation with loads and loads of people, but it's hard because you, when you're doing your price list, you can, but you're not going to put it's, let's just say £20 plus VAT or £30, but you know, clients don't read it as that. And unfortunately, a lot of your clients as well, they just feel like you just claim that back. That makes sense. So to explaining that when it comes to pricing.
No, I was chatting to someone who's quite high up with one of the clothing brands.
Yeah.
And you know, by the time they've done their reclaim, their VAT drops down to 9%.
Yeah.
So they're reclaiming 11%.
Yeah.
I've never managed to reclaim more than about 3 or 4%.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So we're paying 16-17%.
That's it. Yeah.
But again, you're still down to the fact that in reality, if you're charging, say, just for easy sums, a £30 haircut, £6 of that's going to the VAT.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So you're down to £24. Yeah. You know, getting it up to 36 seems to be quite a leap for people.
And that's the
and it's it relates back to wages. It relates back to whether you're cutting your whether you're self-employed, or an employer. Well,
that's right.
You're still stuck with it.
Yeah, it's an ongoing battle, isn't it, in the industry? It's
It would be nice. I think that's the bit I'd just like to see a little bit more parity between stores going through.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, definitely. And that's again, it's I always kind of like it's educating your team members and even your clients
and your
customers.
Yeah, no,
to
definitely.
Say, look, you know, this is why we are more expensive than possibly down the road, and it's. You know, we are VAT registered and we don't just get it back. it goes, unfortunately, we don't see it. And we're the same. We're about 3%, 4%. Yeah. 4%, I'm over the moon.
But I know, it's brutal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really brutal. But with that, so you're presumably, how do you work your, I'm going to try and finish this on a more positive note so that we don't just go off in misery. But you have your academy.
Yeah.
You're presumably training people from other companies.
Yeah.
Do you put your own apprentices through it? Do you have apprentices?
If you join Crate, we do a little bit of a taster course at first. Whether you've been hairdressing, barbering 25 years to a year, you know, we just do a little bit of training with you to begin with, just so that you can see how we do it. It's not saying what you're doing is wrong. This is just how we do it. And please take it away and use it, you know, as much as you like or as little as you like. But in terms of apprentices and anyone coming through, we have a 12-week NVQ course, which a lot of people say are 12 weeks. You can't become a barber in 12 weeks. That's correct. We're not saying you're going to be a barber. You can get a qualification within 12 weeks, but you can't gain all the experience, et cetera, in that amount of time. We start off with just scissor work. So I think we mainly teach scissors to begin with. And then we go on to the clipper side just so that we can educate people on shape and things like that. Because I believe when you know how to cut hair with scissors, you can use clippers to create the same shape. And by the way, there's no right or wrong tool. I think there's, again, going back to the hairdressing and barbering, there's, you know, a lot of hair salons don't allow clippers. Clippers are great if they're used correctly. Same with scissors, you know. It's good. It's really good. You bring your own people through and when they're through, for us to then be like, well, these are great trained, if you like, and then to bring them onto the floor.
That's really exciting.
It's exciting. And clients, customers, they kind of warm to them. I feel like because they feel like they are great, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They warm to them. So that helps.
But you're not turning your apprentices round in 12 weeks.
No.
So, you know, so the qualifications is one thing.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, they're presumably.
On the floor. Yeah.
Because that's the bit I do think that, yeah, the courses are great. I think they're a backbone, and whichever way you slice it, it's the only way.
Yeah.
You need something to give you some structure.
Yeah.
But you do need to be physically teaching your staff your way. So even guys out there that are picking up barbers that have come out from one of your courses or one of the other academies or schools, they need more support. They need this graduate work, which is the only way to do it.
Yeah. And that's
it's a part of it rather than all of it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Exactly that. Mm. Like I said, it's really to get the MVQ and have make sure you know all your sectioning, et cetera, and all the basics. But then,
it's flying hours. Yeah. They've got to stand behind the chair. They've got to have the conversation.
That's right.
And got to cock up that crown.
Yeah, I still go on courses, and we have a monthly session in the company where we educate all the team members once a month. And that might not just me teaching, that's, some of the others getting up and teaching. So, education is a big thing for us.
Does it overlap do the staff work as educators, or have you got staff for that? Or?
No, yeah, so it overlaps, yeah. So we have, you might do 2-3 days behind the salon and then behind the chair, and then a day of teaching. Mm. So it's all set up. And again, some of the staff don't want to get into teaching. Where do you want to go down? Then it might be more the photographic route, or it might be more managerial. Mm. But we can kind of provide all of those paths for all of them. It's good. I guess for the space we have, the educational side, the photographic studio, and the actual just the space, it provides us to be able to provide our team opportunities.
Yeah, no, that's nice.
And that's the main thing.
Before we wrap up, I just want to nudge on, because I keep catching different people in the industry, and certainly some big names.
Yeah.
Kind of that the NVQ is a pointless exercise.
Right.
That it's a qualification that's not needed.
Right.
So I've taken the pledge that anyone who is signing off NVQs needs to be asked the question.
Yeah.
Are they? How are they? And why?
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand why you would
not be qualified.
Not be qualified. It doesn't make sense. If I'm honest, I would actually make it from now, I would make sure every barber's qualified, because it's a service and you're doing someone else's hair. Mm. Now if I knew nothing about the industry and was sat down in a chair and was told, oh, the guy's cutting your hair, he's been doing it 12 years, but he's not qualified, or he's been doing it a year, he's not qualified. Why isn't he?
Mm.
There's not many other industries in the world where you can't be qualified to do it.
No.
That makes sense. So, we are a professional industry. Let's have standards.
It's strengthening those standards, I guess. I mean,
you might be the best barber hairdresser in the world in a few years time, but from day one, when you're on that behind that chair, then let's be behind there with confidence that this person is a qualified barber or hairdresser. And is going to do the best job.
Yeah. Showing a bit of commitment.
Commit yourself to the industry.
Mm. Yeah. Well, hey, mate, I'm sold. I'm a huge advocate of licensing. I think as stores, we should be licensed. We should be regulated. And who knows, if we did, we might be listened to by a government line, and they might recognise that we employ lots of people, train lots of people, and we make the nation look fantastic.
Yeah, that's correct.
Charles, thank you so much.
What's up, man, mate?
Really appreciate your time. Thank you very much for coming up.
Absolute pleasure.
And hopefully we'll get back and catch up again.
Definitely.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to The Noble Barber. Hi there. If you've got a story, or know someone with a story, or have a topic that you think we should cover that we haven't yet, please get in touch. We'd love to speak to you.